Thank you for listening to Internet Boyfriends.
She's jealous, isn't she?
No, I don't think so.
I don't push to the point of insanity. I don't think I'm ever going to prolapse.
We are really bad on staying on top. I fucking apologize to any listeners that think that we're organized in any fucking way.
The Nazis are back, and they're flying over, about to bomb fucking Toronto, duck and cover.
Krampus! Like,
yeah, like, I wish I had a better way of describing that so I didn't sound like a fucking racist. Like,
it's terrible!
As long as I get a laugh and you get a laugh, I think we've been successful, so.
That was my grandmother, you son of a bitch! She didn't splatter like a bag of meat!
I'm telling you what I learned from television and Wikipedia.
She really likes how I say audio.
I know how the internet works.
Internet Boyfriends. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Internet Boyfriends. I am Joey, and with me is the Dominic Toretto.
Oh, no.
And O'Connor.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate pairing with what this episode is about. Or we're very fortunate? I don't know.
Jesus, I didn't even realize that. Oh, I feel bad now. Anyway.
I did wrote it out, and I was like, nope, it's in the notebook. It's in the notes. Sorry. And you are?
I'm Ryan.
And we are Internet Boyfriends, and this is episode number 32. Feel free to feel the Reaper. You can feel the Reaper, or you can fear the Reaper. This episode, you might want to feel free to fear the Reaper, because we're going to be discussing a book called The
Book of Immortality.
By
Adam Gallner, who's a Montreal native.
Really? He's a Montreal native?
Mm-hmm. Montreal features prominently in the book.
Why?
Well, because he happens to live here, so some of his questions where he was talking to people about the topic were in Montreal.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I'm just taken aback because I'm just like, what the... I don't know. Your city amazes the fuck out of me, still.
It's an amazing city. I can't lie.
There was that moment in Any Game, the movie, where I fully knew where Phil Fish is from.
Mm-hmm.
I understood where Polytronic is based. I got all of that. And then they
and he also has a bit of an accent. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, no, I was prepared for it. And then they cut to it in the movie, and I'm like, wow, that's where Ryan lives! Oh my god, I'm a child. Like, I just... So anyways, you were saying you read this book when you went to Cuba?
Mexico. I read half of it in Mexico, because I had a bunch of books, and it wasn't the first thing I read. I also read the Jim Henson biography, a Stephen King book, whose name escapes me. It was the one where there was two books, one by Stephen King, one by Bachman, his other name, and they were sort of mirrors of the same thing. I think it's Desperation and The Regulators. I'm not sure which one I read. I read The Oral History of UCB, and I read this book, or started this book, The Book of Immortality by Adam Gallner. Read it on my Kindle, and picked it up because I really loved Fruit Hunters, which is a book he did talking about people who are obsessed with fruit. And so I was like, oh, I'll try this one too. And I'm mostly glad I did. It's not as good as Fruit Hunters.
Back up a second here. Yep. You got a Kindle?
Yes, I got a Kindle. To go to Mexico with, because it's hard to read an iPad on the beach, and I'm tired of having books taking up room on my shelf, so I've moved to ebooks a lot. So I had to do this.
You've finally...
yes. I mean, I'm going to get Terry Pratchett books in hardcover until probably he dies, or at least stops making books. But otherwise, yeah. I mean, you can't buy them as gifts for people in Canada yet, so I'll probably get some print books for Christmas, and I'm a member of the McSweeney's book club.
Yes.
So we got those in the mail, but like, generally speaking, like with comic books, I'm buying as many as I can digitally so I don't take up space. Because books are big and heavy and take up a lot of space.
They do. They really do. And
I love them, though. I do love them. It is not the same, no matter what anyone says. But it's good enough that I like it more than I like having a book taking up space on my shelf afterwards.
I'd throw this in there that the whole reason we're doing this episode is because of my Kindle, actually. Because when I have a keyboard Kindle. I have a really old Kindle. I fucking love ebooks. I'm a big fan. I have no love whatsoever for print copies anymore because I can't change the goddamn font on a print copy. Yeah, since the thing, I have, people, obviously, I don't know why anyone would fucking know this from listening, but I have really bad eyesight. I have really, really bad eyesight. And when I take my contacts out, I'm fucking blind. And so the more if I take out my contacts at night, I'm trying to do that more often because my eyes are fucking going to fall out of my head if I don't. And so if I want to read at night, I need to have really big font. So I can't buy, I can't afford to buy a book in massive font for at night and then daytime.
They're hard to find for a lot of books too. Like it's only books generally geared towards the elderly that are in large print. There are other ones that are popular that get in large print, but it's not like you can't get every book in large print by any stretch.
And that's when I first bought the Kindle, I made a goal that I wanted to. I know that everyone's all for disposable hardware and things like that, so I was like, I wanted to make sure that I at least had read 100 books on my Kindle before I either upgraded or it died or anything. So it's been a race. The screen actually got a little bit of a scratch on it. I take very good care of my Kindle, but it still shit happens. And I was like, yeah, 100 books. And so you'd think a normal person would be like, I'm going to read 100 of the shortest books I can possibly find in order to hit my goal before this thing dies so I could feel fulfilled. I didn't do that. I picked 100 books at random, or like 100 books.
Kept reading until you got to 100 books.
Essentially, I still haven't gotten there. I'm at 85 right now.
Okay.
And that's after like 2 years probably of owning it. So
that's more than the vast majority of people read.
It's also, okay, that's the thing too. On the Kindle, I just read straight up ebooks that I get. I don't read anything for work on my Kindle. I don't read anything comic book wise on my Kindle, obviously.
Oh, no, yeah.
As we discussed last night, I read a lot more books than the fucking 85 in the 2 or so years that I've had my Kindle. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to read a lot more, especially because I felt like my average dropped a lot over the last 2 or so months. And this is the reason we're doing this podcast. I feel I need more information. I need more input because I took on reading about codependency.
Okay.
And also I found a book about the birth of... It's called The Birth of Plenty. So it's about the Industrial Revolution and how we went from having essentially nothing and very small GDP growth to very huge GDP growth. It's a big, thick... I don't want to say it's boring, but it's fucking boring. If anybody else read it, they'd probably fall asleep reading it. And I'm reading it like, all right, okay, it's a good book. I would recommend it to anyone who
is an economics nerd.
It's pretty cool. I don't necessarily agree with him in all the points, but it's a good book.
More proof you're an economics nerd. You can read it, extrapolate enough to understand I don't agree with what you're saying. I believe this is a different branch of economics than what you're saying in this book.
So maybe I might actually do a podcast with you about it. I'll distill it down into something that's palatable and we could do a podcast about it if you'd like to do that, but we'll see. Anyways, what I want to talk about was the Book of Immortality, because I feel like all I've been doing is reading about the same two topics for the last fucking 2 months. I'm just like, hey, Ryan read a book that I would never fucking read for whatever reason. No, I really want to talk about this. So let me start off with David Copperfield.
David Copperfield has an island called Musha or Musha K that he... Oh, how did he find it? He drew lines between four important areas like the Pyramids of Giza, Easter Island, Stonehenge, and I feel like some South American pyramid. And where those lines intersected was this island in the Bahamas called Musha K, and it happened to be available for purchase.
Of course, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. And he believes, and I haven't done research much since then, but this book was published this year, so presumably it's relatively up to date. He believes that there is a fountain of youth on there that can bring leaves back to life and like bugs and stuff. And he is currently claims to be testing this theory and wants to have definitive results before seeing everything to the world. But he has come out and said he believes there is a fountain of youth on his property.
And he's getting this tested by who?
Biologists that he has on staff. And other scientists that he has on staff. We don't... They're all non-disclosure agreements. It's all like... You couldn't find out a lot of information about this in this book because he wasn't allowed. He ended up going traipsing off in the woods at some point secretly and trying to find it. But he doesn't know... Because there's a few islands that he owns, so we're not sure which island it's on. But on the main island, he found somewhere that could have been. Took a sip of the water. Nothing happened, obviously, because it's probably not this... it's probably not that. But yeah, it's so... David Copperfield is currently claiming that there is a fountain of youth on his island that Sergey Brin got married on and other things have happened on, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
I fucking even don't know how to... That's how the book opens.
No, that's not even how it opens. That's like... That is a good third of the book is revolving around him trying to get to the island, him at the island, him talking to Copperfield about the thing. All that stuff is a good third of the book. Yeah, about a third, yeah, whatever. It doesn't need to be exact, but like about a third of the book is revolving around that. The other parts, because it's split into three sections, belief, magic, and science.
And I'm assuming he's the magic part.
He's most of the magic part, yes. Obviously, it is a bit of a process to get to this place, because it's David Copperfield, and he's a crazy person. Well, potentially a crazy person, I don't know, but we'll see.
I don't know enough about the guy. But
he's certainly eccentric. And that picture is painted very well in this book.
So.
But yeah, it's so the
No, like monkey dressed up monkey butlers?
No, no, just a monkey butlers, but it's just like it's clear he's in his own little world. He's in his own world at this point. Like when you're that rich and that famous, you can't be like normal people anymore.
Generally, no.
Once you own an island, you sort of waive your rights as a normal human being. You are now crazy enough because you're so rich that things don't matter the same way to you as they do other people, and that almost inevitably makes you a little crazy.
Yeah, no,
I would say.
From New Jersey, that'll make you fucking crazy.
That's true. I know no sane people from New Jersey.
It sold 40 million tickets and grossed over $4 billion, more than any other solo entertainer in history. That's fucking impressive. I never...
Yeah.
Wow, fucking... He is the magic man. All right, okay. Well, I kind of feel like a dick now, because in my notes, I was kind of like, oh, David Copperfield, he's fucking... Fuck that guy. Like, I don't think anybody... I think I'm at the point in my life where I don't think I can look at anybody who made that much... money. It shouldn't be an issue of money. It should be, he's a guy that made a lot of people happy, and he's become really successful, and really hasn't hurt anybody. I guess you could, because I mean, it's not like he's ever said what he's doing is real. He's made it clear he's an illusionist, Michael.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah, he's I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to feel about that, because I think it's okay then if he wants to go crazy and say that he has a fountain. He could say he has a fountain
sure.
in his pants, as far as I'm concerned.
That sounds like something he probably has tried at some point. He's a bit of a hound, but...
Hey, fucking whatever. Yeah,
more power to him.
I mean, if
most women must know what they're getting into at this point if they're going on a date with David Copperfield.
Yeah, dude, if you're dating a magician, you know what you're getting into. Sorry. Yeah. I don't mean the stereotype, but fucking, you know, magicians.
Yeah.
No, I feel bad because I kind of was like, ooh, fucking, this is obviously bullshit. And it is most likely bullshit.
Yeah.
It is almost without a doubt bullshit. But it's nowhere near the sort of bullshit we've talked about in the past, like talking about the ideas like positive thought will cure your cancer.
No, it's not the secret. At least, and he seems to be genuine in his hope that it's going to be a boon to mankind. Like, he's not trying to make a ton of money off of it right now or anything.
Yeah, I feel bad even saying something like snarky about that. It, you know, more power to him. You know, in the same way that, like, did they mention is it Ray Kurzweil? I'm forgetting who the guy is. There's some dude who takes a lot of fucking vitamins all the time. I think it's Ray Kurzweil. Yeah, it's fucking Ray Kurzweil. It's without a doubt Ray Kurzweil. He is another person, a futurist, that thinks that he is going to live on and on and on through, or he's gonna prolong his life, you know, substantially through, you know, the proper diet and the proper proper regimen and all those things, whatever. Because I guess he doesn't ever drive in a car or ride on a bus or be in a plane or I don't know. For some reason, I tend to think the reason I would never read this book, and I know I'm also exposing myself as a cynical, snarky asshole here, is that you can control everything in your life. You can control what goes into your body, what you eat, how you eat it, how many vitamins you take in a day, how much you walk in a day, how much exercise you get. You can wear the right kind of shoes, the right kind of clothes. You can live in the right climate. You can live in the perfect house and all of these things. And unless you're going to be a complete hermit with a really good security team, I don't really see a lot of these things working out, because, you know, you're trying to eradicate heart disease by way of that, which is good. Again, I don't want to be an asshole, but it just kind of seems like some of this stuff does start to go into that realm of like positive thought and the secret and like horoscopes and shit like that, of where it's like you can't know what the future is and you can't control outside of what's going on with you. I mean, that's the reason why, like, to expose my liberal socialist leanings, that's the whole reason we have welfare programs and wealth transfers and things like that, is because you generally want to keep everybody on an even keel all the time, because that's just the way you want to do it. I'm not saying like passive, like I'm not saying like go, you know, like Brave New World on people and like, you know, pacify them with the orgy porgy.
No, of course. And the book isn't like, the book is not trying to find the answer to immortality. It's more going around and talking to these people and seeing what they think about it and just talking about that search for seeing what people think about it. Like, the reason I liked Fruit Hunter so much is he wasn't, like, a crazy fruit guy. He just thought this obsession these people had was interesting, and then went and followed that. And that's sort of the same as this. He finds the fascination with immortality interesting, and then he goes and tries to get to the bottom of that fascination, as opposed to trying to find a way for himself to be immortal, which yeah. is a much more interesting take on it than most of these books.
Very, it is. It really is. And I don't mean to come off as an uneducated hump. Like, why would you want to read a book about that shit? Because I do want to read a book about that shit, but I would rather distill it down to this discussion between me and you.
You'd rather have a discussion with someone who's read a book about that shit.
Because I just can't. I can't shrug off my, like, Carl Brutano-Lanowski beliefs of, like, go ahead and, you know, work out those guns, you know, like get those great abs. You know, someone's just going to stab you with a knife, and that's going to be it. And that's how I feel. That's how I feel about all this stuff, is no matter how powerful you think you can become, no matter how much you think you can prolong your life, a car is going to hit you.
Well, that's another interestingly enough, he deals with that right away, in that he's not looking for people that are just trying to live for a very long time. He's looking for people who are trying to avoid dying. So that's why he gets into cryonics. That's why he gets into people that believe in, like, stuff that makes you actually immortal, as in that not that you will live until you die indefinitely, but that you will not die.
I want to know more about cryonics.
It's depressing. I think there's, if I remember, there's two cryonics facilities in North America, or at least in the States. Probably North America, because it's a Canadian writer and would have covered Canadian ones that they were available. But I think there's one in, like, L.A. or California.
That makes sense.
Or there's one in the Southwest, and there's one, like, in Minnesota or Wisconsin or something, I think. I don't know if it's because it's colder, but I think there's two facilities left. And one, I think, only saves heads, so it'd have to be, like, a transmetropolitan thing where they'll build you a new body or something to put your somehow preserved self from that head into. And one preserves either head for cheaper or the whole body. And the one that he went to was one that preserved whole bodies, and they're stored upside down because they have to top off the solution that they're in regularly. So they have to keep the head at least in so deep that the temperature change doesn't happen. So you're stored upside down for eternity, or until someone figures out a way to fix you. If you're a pet, you are dumped into a vat of frozen pets, which is depressing. And most tellingly, these cryonics facilities are registered as morgues, because they have to be, because you are storing dead bodies. Whether they're hoping to revive these dead bodies, they are currently dead.
Yes.
And yeah, like it was a fad. It seems to have mostly died. These places don't seem to be thriving facilities, which makes me a little concerned for the future. Because, yep. I mean, ultimately, there's the chances of these people being revived are slim to none, but I feel like they should be preserved forever because they paid for it, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if the contracts actually say something like forever or 200 years, whichever comes first. You know what I mean? So they're not in a breach of contract and can be sued potentially in hundreds of years. Yeah, I don't know. It was a depressing part of the book. Because clearly these people had delusions or hopes, and the guys running it seemed to think that it could happen. Like, they're not disenfranchised yet. They're still those people that are holding on to the grim strings of hope kind of thing. Maybe it'll work, but it's not going to work, guys. Probably.
Is there any?
And if it does, it's going to be like Transmetropolitan.
Okay. If someone said to me, "Here is a free coupon for a cryogenics facility, and you have to pay nothing. You can just either take it or leave it. You know, that's what it is." I would obviously take it. I would donate my body to science, and I would totally take it.
I would rather. I mean, if it was just my head, I don't care. Like, I'm not using it anymore. If I can come back to life magically, sure. But I want my organs to go to people that can use them.
Yeah, that's what I'm. That's what I want anyway. And I do still feel like it is a complete gamble, but not in the same way. Or maybe in the same way you do. I don't think that it's a gamble in that we won't eventually find some way to recreate or clone a body or something along those lines. That's entirely possible. I think that if the world doesn't kill itself and we don't destroy ourselves through some sort of environmental something or whatever happens, or I'm not going to zombies because fucking
no, that's not gonna happen.
But I'm saying like nuclear war, fucking, you know, cataclysmic event, things like that. Whatever it is, that if we can avoid that stuff, we can continue on. There is without a doubt, there's going to be something where someone's going to say like, hey, like, can we do this? Like, why not? Like, let's give it a shot. Science will, I would assume, evolve to that, but you know, get to that point.
I'm dubiously found the way to preserve bodies to get to that point though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that either that place is shutting down or there's no way. Like, they're just, because much like a Transmetropolitan, I mean, what are you just going to dump a head in a jar and be like, oh, this is going to be fine? Like, no, it's not. No, it's not at all. I mean, is it possible that maybe they could clone you? Yeah. Could they bring back your consciousness? Fuck no. I don't think there's, I think that's that might be a step too far for me. Did he talk about that at all? I'm guessing no, because that's pretty questionable. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't buy the idea of bringing back someone's consciousness. I think once you're dead, you're dead.
I mean, it'd be nice, but I honestly don't want to live forever. Like, I'm not that guy. I'm never going to be that guy. I mean, maybe not never, but I can't see myself being that guy, because it's, unless everyone else is forever, that seems extremely lonely. And we have massive population problems, but still, that's a whole other conversation. But like, it's just, since I don't care what happens to me after I'm dead, you could sell me just as happily to some necrophiliac, and I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care. So, if my loved ones wanted to save my head and freeze it, there's more power to them. If they don't and don't care, I don't care. I don't want anyone to go broke about it. I don't want anyone to spend any money on it. But like you said, if you get a coupon, meh, who cares?
It's a pretty slim gamble, I know that. I have never had any hopes for anything like that, but I guess what interests me about it is, in the same way I guess that all of this stuff interests people, is that I had that moment, I don't know, two and a half weeks ago. I'm sitting on the toilet, you know, like you do, and I was actually reading that book about the Industrial Revolution, and there was a short part where they talk about the Spanish Inquisition. And
I can't hear the word Spanish Inquisition without thinking Monty Python and laughing.
That's the thing? Me too. Reading about the actual Spanish Inquisition, a real fucking, a solid account of the Spanish Inquisition, of something that happened to a guy during the Spanish Inquisition, I immediately put the book down, and I just sat there, rocking back and forth on the little...
Their chief weapons aren't surprise! Their chief weapons aren't surprise!
Yeah, I know that a lot of people, like, well, I know we joke about that, but I literally put the book down and started rocking back and forth, because I was like, I'm going to die? That's going to happen? It's going to happen way before I'm ready? The world is a scary, scary place. I don't want to die. I don't want all this to end. I want to tell my friends that I love them and that I care about them very much. I want to tell my girlfriend that I love her and I care about her very much. I want everyone to know how much they mean to me, and I want to make a mark, and I want to do all these things, and all those like typical like human, you know, very base sort of like, I want someone to remember who I am. No one's ever going to remember who you are. I mean, Genghis Khan, there's going to be a point in time where Genghis Khan is just going to be a name in a book. I mean, maybe not, but you know, for the most part, for the vast majority of humans, we're going to die and we're just going to disappear, and that's it. So for that reason alone, if someone gave me a coupon to this, I'm like, yeah, fucking let's try it. I think it's more just fear. All of this is entirely fear-based, and that's what I don't like about it. That's why I feel confident in my cynicism and my skeptic douchey behavior, is that I feel okay being like, you're just motivated by fear, so therefore you're being an asshole. Because usually when people do things out of fear, it almost never ends well. Like, unless there's like a fucking panther that's like stalking around your house about to eat you, generally it's fair to say if you act in fear, you're going to do something that you're going to regret. And even then, I mean, fuck it, we've seen enough horror movies to know when you act in fear, you're going to trip over something, or and then Jason's going to hack you to pieces. I mean, I don't know. It's just the meaning of death, like my personal relationship with death is changing as time goes on. I'm 29. I don't want to be 29. I really don't. I want to be
I tell you from the future that 30 is not any different than 29.
I know.
Any more than 28 was different than 29.
I'm just old enough to know that I don't care anymore about the things that I should. I mean, Kevin Smith had, during one of his, like, Evening with Kevin Smith, the fucking talks that he does at colleges, he makes the point that Chasing Amy and a lot of his movies as he went on were sort of born out of the idea that as he got older, he was like, when he was younger, he's like, oh, you know, who's that guy doing, or what's going on with this, or all these very, like, you know, close to home sort of things, and really probably getting into other people's business and such. Because you're a teenager, like, who's dating who, what's going on, like, what's going on in my little bubble, and as your bubble starts to expand, you start to see more of the world, you know, you just kind of get to a point of where you're like, I don't care who's fucking who, I don't care what politician is corrupt or what's going on with the world, I just don't want to die, and I want to live a decent life. Yeah, and that's, I've got to that point now. So when I saw you reading this, I was like, I want to talk about this, because is there any actual science?
Well, they talk about stuff like, in the science section, beyond cryonics, they're talking about life-extending surgeries and stuff that they've done experiments on mice and things that make them live slightly longer with some chemicals that they, like, so, there's fruits that's, like, there's all sorts of tests and stuff. Each chapter is about a different aspect of that. So there are other things, but none of them at all make it seem like it will ache. They're all for extending life and quality of life, not for preventing death. So they don't really apply for immortality, because you can still die. You can still get your head chopped off and die. So it was all, like, life extension stuff, which is plausible. Certainly more plausible than cryonics at this point. But not anywhere near. Like, it's always been like, oh, we're 10 years off from a breakthrough for the last 50 years kind of thing. It's all a matter of faith, really.
Well, but also it's a lot of I've heard a little bit about the whole Ray Kurzweil thing of taking vitamins and doing those sorts of things. And the same reason I take a vitamin every day, I don't fucking, for all I know, this vitamin could just be styrofoam. Like, I have no fucking clue what I'm taking. I know what it says in the bottle, but I have no idea what I'm actually eating in that vitamin. It's supposed to make me live longer, a longer, happier, healthier life, but fucking, I don't know, man. I have no idea. So it's, I guess that's faith too. I guess taking a vitamin, trusting the
It is. It's all, what it came down to was, it's all faith ultimately.
God, that is fucking horrifying.
There was a TED talk, I think yesterday even, about how to look at death, and the guy painted in that Long John Silver was not afraid of death. He just has his book, like, birth is the opening cover, death is the end cover, and your life is everything in the middle. So you can't worry about everything outside of it. It's just, you worry about what is between the covers, and make it as good a story as possible. And I thought, oh, that's a very good way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that either, because I do, as much as I do personally agree with that, I don't know if that's a practical way to go to the masses and be like, this is the way it is, and everyone will be like, yeah, fuck the
environment. Of course, but like,
it's not a good policy decision, but it's a good personal decision. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, is there anything else that we could glean from the Book of Immortality?
Nah, not really.
Really?
If you like the idea of someone going around and interviewing people that are crazily obsessed with something, I would recommend his book, Fruit Hunters, more than I would recommend the Book of Immortality.
Okay. Fruit Hunters it is, then. All right. Well, then I guess we better wrap this up. And, yeah. Thanks for listening. I'm Joey, again. This is me, Joey. And I am at Joey Heflick on Twitter. And with me, as always, is
Ryan, at Gobo on Twitter.
It's getting late in the day. Yeah. It's late in the day. We're old, and it's late in the day, and we'll be lucky if we see another internet boyfriends, because death is coming. Oh God. Oh, I'm gonna be depressed for the rest of the day after this conversation.
It's inevitable. Like, you can't do anything about it, so there's no reason to get beat up about it. Like, it's just gonna happen someday. Hopefully, right. A long time from now.
Then I'm gonna live my life like I'm always waiting to record the next internet boyfriends.
Exactly. So, there's always an internet boyfriends on the horizon. That's if right. not, I'll record a podcast by myself crying for half an hour. We should record an intro that I can plug in to your death, to one of our death podcasts, and then save it for if that ever happens, and then record a podcast and release it.
That's fucking morbid. I don't know if I can do that.
I'm quite comfortable with morbidity, though.
All right, until next time, we are your boyfriends. Thank you for listening. We love you all.
Take care.